racetracks around Australia. Here's Inside Motorsport.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Inside Motorsport. Colin Ford will be joining us in a few moments, but well, we first might take a look at NASCAR racing overseas now, where Jeremy Mayfield will lead them to the green flag. Mayfield shows some restrictor plate racing experts how to do it at Talladega on Friday when he won his first Bud pole in more than 2 years. He now hopes to do the same thing in the race. The Die Hard 500, for those of you with Fox Sport, will be seen at 3 a.m. Eastern Time. If you're watching today, Joe Nemechek, he held out for his first win of 2000. Restrictor plate Joe doesn't have much of a ring to it, but it might stick, as Joe Nemechek was once again the class of the field in a incident-laden NASCAR Busch Grand National Super Speedway race, the Touchstone Energy 300 at Talladega. And plenty more coming up from America a little bit later on the show. We'll also take a look at the kart FedEx Champ Car Series. We'll have some news on the super touring cars, drag racing, and a whole bunch more. I hope you can stay with us right throughout the evening. Colin Ford, as he has made his way into the studio now. An interesting weekend over there at Brands Hatch, where we were speaking to Greg Stratt last weekend, with the British Touring Car Championship having, two interesting races, to say the least, and two different winners at Brands Hatch.
Well, that's right. First round of the British Touring Car Championship, and in the sprint race in round one, it was a win for Ford with Alan Menu on pole position, and that put him in total control of the race from the start of the race right through the finish. Behind him, wheel spin at the start caused his teammate Rickard Rydell to dive to the inside of the track from second of the grid to protect his position into the first corner from Vauxhall's Ivan Muller, who got away from the line better. But as it was a case that there was a bit of scrapping going on through the field, and there was a bit of push and shove going on, which caused independence champion Matt Neal and his assistant Primera to drop out of the pack later after receiving damage in a collision with Rydell, the resulting oversteer slowing his progress. After some repairs in the pits, Neal was able to rejoin the race and hold on to his lead in the Michelin Cup for independence. But very interesting to see the fact that first time out for Alain Menu in the Ford Mondeo, doing quite well there. And in the second race, the long race, Vauxhall's Jason Plato scored the win. He was able to do quite well there. So that after the two rounds at Brands Hatch, Plato leads the championship by 2 points from his teammate Ivan Muller, with Menu following there. Matt Neal round one of the Michelin Cup for Independence, with Colin Blair taking round two. Also, first time out for the production cars in Class B, it was won by Alan Morrison in the first race, and James Kay, a man who's previously been known for Super Tourers, in the second race. So certainly some fun and games there at the first round of the British Touring Car Championship at Brands Hatch.
And we're looking forward to catching up with all the action once again next week, when, Colin, you'll be doing it on your pad.
Yep.
And, we're very interested to see how that series shapes up. One series that is shaping up fantastically well is the Australian Drag Racing Championships. And joining us on the line, Rob Oberg, you got to see two more rounds of competition last night at Willowbank Raceway, starting with the Top Door Slammers, and Judd taking out his first win in Top Door Slammer competition. A very happy South Australian.
Oh, certainly. Robin Judd was over the moon. He's had the bridesmaid's dress four times this season, so to speak, and he finally broke through for a win. But boy, didn't he do it in style.
Yeah, a fantastic run there. And still, Coop is consolidating his position at the top of the tree, but Judd is making a late charge.
Well, yeah, the championship is the tightest in Top Door Slammer we've ever seen it. Dave Coop from South Australia is still in the lead, but by only 2 points from Victor Bray. And then, just 13 points further back, is Robin Judd from Western Australia. And then the Victorian, Peter Kapiris, is actually still in striking distance in fourth. So we've got one round to go, four drivers, all within shot of the championship.
And one thing you'll be happy about is you won't miss a moment of the action with the final round. Of course, the Winter Nationals up there at Willowbank Raceway, Konica once again being part of that.
Yeah, certainly. The Konica Winter Nationals on the 9th to 11th of June will see the final round of all the various category championships for Australian drag racing at the one event. And the way things are shaping up, we probably expect about 500 entries for that one, and probably three very busy days for us.
Yeah, it is going to be as well. But you weren't only blessed with top door slammer competition in the Group 1 categories. You also had some more action of Group 1 style, and another interesting result coming in pro stock. Of course, these cars, my favourite division, always well subscribed, and well, a very interesting battle going on there with about three drivers still in contention from memory.
Yeah, the title was still wide open going into this event, but the two main protagonists, Peter Ridgway and Bruno Cognetto, I guess had a bit of a lead out from the rest. Bruno Cognetto in the VPW mail order car, unfortunately, he actually had a lean condition and burnt up three pistons in qualifying, and was a fairly shattered man not to be able to contest racing last night. What that's led to is Peter Ridgway went right through the event, won the final, and actually reset the Australian pro stock record in the process down to 7.66 seconds, and has now got an unbeatable lead. He will be the 2000 pro stock champion.
Alright, so good news there for the Queenslanders with Ridgway, of course a long time pro stock competitor, taking out another championship.
Yeah, it's certainly been a good performance for Peter. He has made a big comeback. His car was brand new car, was totally destroyed on its maiden pass down the quarter mile about 18 months ago. And to come back and having performed a huge rebuild and win the title and reset the record, I think it sort of speaks for his dedication to the class.
And one of the biggest issues at the moment in drag racing, particularly in Australia, is of course the changes that are being proposed, and at the moment they are only proposals, in the ANDRA rulebook to once again bring themselves in line, particularly in top fuel and funny car, with the NHRA and the IHRA's move to restrict the amount of nitromethane that can be pumped through the engines, thereby creating more side-by-side passes, which is working extremely well over in the United States.
Yeah, I think, I would suggest that it's probably the most non-controversial change we've ever seen. The raceways are all for it, the promoters. The races are actually for it, and so is the organisation. So it is going to happen. In actual fact, Steve Reed and the Rappersada Racing team were up here on the weekend doing some testing at the 90%. So they're determined to try and get a few runs on the board with the 90% nitro before the new season and see if they can steal a march on the opposition.
Well, it's obviously a fait accompli, so anyone who's not already trying to do some testing on it is going to be left behind in the 2000-2001 series.
I would suggest that you'll see a lot of people running the lower percentage of nitromethane at the Conica Winter Nationals. In top fuel eliminator Darren DeFilippo, if he turns up at the event and qualifies, he's won the championship. So I think he won't be, he's not in a position where he has to worry about taking the risk. And I wouldn't be surprised if you see him, along with just about everybody else, reducing their dosage, so to speak, voluntarily.
Yeah, the other great thing too in drag racing this year, with DeFilippo being up at the front, a good young driver that's got a lot of talent, is that we've seen so many drivers participating in all the Group 1 divisions, and that has been, for someone stuck in New South Wales, that's been a great thing to realise that drag racing's going on from strength to strength, even though it's in a major hiatus here in Australia, in New South Wales and ACT.
Yeah, it just makes the everybody involved in the sport wonder where we'd be at if we weren't facing the problems we are in New South Wales. I mean, not only is there no championship racing at Eastern Creek at the moment, but due to a protracted legal case, there's no drag racing in the ACT, as you say. That hopefully will be resolved shortly. The court case is over, the judge has reserved his decision, and just everybody has to wait and see whether he hands down a decision that says that racetrack will be reopened.
Yeah. But probably just as importantly, as we're talking drag racing, the Kiwanis plans getting off the ground in Western Australia has shored up Western Australia's future with the movement there from Ravenswood over to Kiwanis next season, and also Willowbank Raceway is certainly not involved in what's happened just a few metres down the road at the Queensland Raceway, where they just could not hit a lick right from the start.
Yeah, that's certainly correct. There was, unfortunately, a bit of misconception around the sport that Willowbank Raceway was in some way involved in the touring car track at Queensland Raceway, and that's sort of far from the truth. That issue down there seems to have been resolved. The track has been sold to a consortium of motorsports people. I might say the track cost about $9 million to build, and it's been sold for $2.35 million, so somebody got a bargain.
Yeah, that's the truth, isn't it?
But by the same token, it's good news for motorsport in Queensland, because Lakeside faces a very uncertain future with a few council difficulties and development difficulties over there. And I know that from Willowbank Raceway's point of view, we believe that the more motorsport that is in a strong and healthy position, the better for all of us.
That's right. And I don't know whether you caught this, but I'll let you have an opportunity to respond. In NHRA action over there in Houston, they're racing this weekend, and the nine-time champion John Force, he held off in Fonda car qualifying with his Friday time of 4.839 to lead the Sunday eliminations for the 13th annual O'Reilly Nationals presented by Pennzoil at a Houston Raceway Park. Kenny Bernstein, he's continued once again, coming off a win at Las Vegas, to lead the top fuel class with his Friday run of 4.566, whilst Jim Yates and Bob Pinilla both lead the Pro Stock and Pro Stock Trucks respectively, whilst Randy Daniels has become the first driver in Pro Stock Truck to exceed 180 miles an hour. Now, just my simple understanding of drag racing, the Pro Stock Truck rules towards engines are a lot like our Pro Stock division.
Yeah, that's certainly right. Randy Daniels, in actual fact, supplies the engines for Bruno Cognetto's VPW mail order team. And I would consider that Bruno is very, very much looking forward to receiving the engine that's over there at the moment. He set it back for a little bit more development, and basically Randy passes on everything he's got to Bruno. They're exactly the same engine. The difference is in the US they run a pickup truck, whereas over here we run a sedan. And come the Konica Winter Nationals, I think that national record is going to be under threat again.
Well, it's a very, very exciting division, the Pro Stock Truck, and the Pro Stock here in Australia. And I know it's my favourite division, because every meeting you go to, there's always someone who's getting bumped from the field and doesn't even get to eliminations, which just shows the strength of the division. And that, particularly on a qualifying day, makes it for a very exciting qualifying.
Yeah, that's certainly the case. The Konica Winter Nationals in particular, we now build a huge show around Saturday night, where all of the Group 1 professional categories, from Pro Stock Motorcycle through the Top Fuel, have their final two sessions on Saturday night. And the crowd for that Saturday's Night of Thunder now very much rivals the Sunday race crowd.
Yes, and understandably so, because a lot of excitement. If you're not a traditionalist, just the excitement of seeing cars paired passing, going down there just to make the show is very, very exciting. And we can't wait to see some more drag racing closer to the action. But until then, we know that you and all the fellas up there with the Channel 7 crew put together a great package for the Konica Winter Nationals, which can be seen on Fox Sports here right around Australia.
Yeah, that's right. We produce the Reckless Hotline Drag Racing Show, and it's seen on the 7 network throughout Queensland and Fox Sports across the country. In actual fact, the next episode is being broadcast by Fox Sports next Tuesday afternoon at 5:30 p.m. So if everybody is able to get home from work in a hurry, they'll be able to enjoy an hour of some very, very good top fuel drag racing.
Or set the videos.
That's the case as well.
All right, Rob Oberg, it's been a pleasure to catch up with you again. Much drag racing going on between now and the Winter Nationals?
We've got the Coca-Cola Australian Wild Bunch titles on May the 6th. And I would suggest that we're going to be very, very busy with testing between now and then as well, because already a number of the top door slammer teams and pro stock teams and even a couple of the top fuel teams have been making inquiries about when they can get on the track and try and get on top of their combinations before the biggest race of the year.
Rob Oberg, it's been a pleasure to catch up with you again, and we look forward to speaking to you in the lead-up to the Konica Winter Nationals.
Thanks, Craig.
Yeah, and just having a look at news from the United States, We've been trying to get hold of the results from the Indy Lights.
In fact, it's racing tomorrow morning.
Yes, at Long Beach. Johnny Kane has got the pole for Long Beach, the Dayton Indy Lights pole at Long Beach. And he's going to share the front row with 19-year-old Scott Dixon from New Zealand, who's driving the Powerware Lola. Interesting enough, it was Jason Bright who held the provisional pole up until the final qualifying session, and he, Jason Bright, will start from third place on the grid. So things looking good there for Jason Bright and also our Kiwi friend Scott Dixon. So there's two Anzacs there in second and third positions on the grid for the Dayton Indy Lights at Long Beach. In other news, American Le Mans Series founder Don Panoz has given the race of 1,000 years a boost by hailing its Adelaide venue as the home of Australian motorsport. Panoz was a guest of the V8 supercar Clipsal 500. He went there to get an idea of what to expect for the New Year's Eve race of 1,000 years. After his visit, Panoz said that he'd watched the videos, talked to people and seen photos of what the track was like, but nothing could prepare you for what actually happens here in Adelaide and how freshly everything is run. So I'd say from that, we're looking forward to a great race, and already they're talking about possibly that they will confirm after Le Mans whether Mario Andretti will come down to race in another Panoz car for the event, but already he's talking about bringing at least four of those Panozes to Australia, one of them potentially for an Australian and New Zealand driver yet to be announced.
Oh, an interesting one there. Phil Brannigan from Motorsport News, you will be the first to know, I'm sure, when that announcement is made, but have you got any hot tickets for us?
I can tell you, I can probably surmise the New Zealander, but the Australian's a little bit more open than that. No, Mr. Panos is going to play his cards pretty close to his chest, but I expect he'll tell us first.
Well, you couldn't imagine someone like Vern Schuppen getting back into it?
No. I don't think so.
Vern's doing well with his vineyard instead, isn't he?
I think so, yeah. He's got a lot in common, those two. And also, Don Panos is a very keen motorsport news reader, so, you know, he shows the best of taste.
Well, for people who haven't picked up their edition yet, it is on the newsstand, and, well, We're Back is probably exactly what everyone in the V8 supercar grid did not want to hear. Did not want to hear in as much as a Holden HRT being right at the front and dominating, and particularly Mark Scaife, who, when he hit his run in the 80s with Jim Richards, he was unstoppable.
Well, the HRT are the dream team at the moment. There's no question that that's the benchmark that everyone is aspiring to in touring car racing. But it's not quite as clear-cut as it has been for some years. I think Gary Rogers is getting very close. Tanda seems to be the driver closest in stature, excuse the pun, to Lowndes. And I guess he's the one guy out there that is maybe fairly confident that he can go out there and beat Lowndes. So it's not quite as clear-cut, but you've got to say HRT are the benchmark at the moment. Had an interesting reaction to the Clipsal 500. Who won?
Garth Tander. We spoke to him last week on the show.
No, he didn't. Mark Scaife did. The regulations say the winner of the second race wins the Clipsal 500.
Well, that's not what the press release said.
Well, Garth gets the most points. It's the same situation as last year. Straight after the race, Lowndes was the driver who'd taken the victory, but once the disqualification was taken into account, Greg Murphy took the most points. So it's a funny race meeting. I know the opposition have got Garth Tander on the cover. We've had a few phone calls in the office and saying, hey, what's going on? Scaife didn't win. Yeah, he did win, but Tander got the most points.
It's all designed to confuse us, isn't it?
Yeah, but it doesn't take a lot.
Mm. But of course, we've got this other big story that's running, which is your page 3 story of V8 Supercars Reclaim October. And the possibility of Sandown hosting a November Grand Finale in 2001. So, of course, that's probably something that's going to dominate Australian motorsport over the next few weeks.
Yes, October's the traditional date, of course. There's a lot of histrionics and history involved with who did what, who left, and who got the date, and why it happened. Let's not get too selective in our memory, but it looks like they will be back. The V8s will be back in October. Interesting to note that 18 months ago, Tony Cochran said, we wouldn't go back, we'll build our own tradition in November. First chance that gets available again, he's there.
Mm. But of course, it all revolves around what the 7 Network's doing, and they're staying pretty well mum to everybody.
Yes, I guess a lot of people in this business know that I've got some good contacts at 7, and no one's saying too much, but it does appear as though the race 2 weeks ago was going to move to March. It now looks like it's not going to move to March at all. It's like that Channel 7 will actually yank the chain. But Channel 7 haven't made that announcement. That's a rumour at this stage. If Channel 7 do want to make that announcement, we don't want to preempt anything they say about that. But that's what people are saying in the background at the moment.
Mm. Yeah, which makes it very difficult for those guys who've been working on, you know, sort of a race series and to turn up to Bathurst with the super tourers and future tourers and the like, and all of a sudden the rug's pulled out from under them.
But how does this sound? All the super touring teams get to sell their hotel reservations, so the V8 supercar teams are probably a profit.
Yeah. Oh, that might help boost their rank somewhat.
I think I'll be sticking my hands up for a couple of rooms at the James Cook.
Mm. Yeah.
The other interesting thing that's going on at the moment is parity. And at the start of the season, and particularly at the end of last season, everything seemed to be relatively even. Ford's had a lot more horsepower, and Holden had a slightly better handling package. This year, it just seems everyone wants to win.
Well, everyone wants to win. It's an interesting thing that 12 months ago, when Greg Harbutt was still running Ford's motorsport department, there was this chatter about parity in the background. With Howard Marston taking over that role, it's been very quiet, and Howard's kind of a backroom operator, and I mean that in the nicest possible way. He's very good at getting his message through, but he's not going to stand up on the mountaintop and shout it out so that everyone can hear it. But the rules actually say technical parity based on results, and you've got to say at the moment, based on the results, the Fords need help. So it's interesting to know what they're going to do. And some of the Ford teams have been saying, we know exactly what we want to do. But there was a good suggestion today from John Bowe on RPM on Channel 10, saying that maybe they should get somebody like Jeff Brabham involved, someone who's neutral, and can go out there and test both cars. To that, I would say, let's throw Jim Richards in there as well and see what he says.
Yeah, very good idea. You were talking about hotels before, and one of the interesting stories in Motorsport News is that a new hotel could be built on a very interesting level on the corner in Conrad Strait.
That's right. There's the possibility that, it's going ahead now, that investors are going to be invited to invest an amount of money to buy a room as an investment, which will be let out on a regular basis for any race meeting that goes on at Mount Panorama. My only concern would be that at 10:03 on what may now be the first Sunday in October, Garth Tander and Craig and Glenn Seaton pop over the crest. If the hotel's crossing the track and there are some guys that have been partying all night at the windows of the hotel, what do you think they're going to see? Maybe a crest hand up against the window. I'm not sure about that, but anything's possible at Bathurst, as we well know.
Mm. I suppose the idea would be to buy yourself the best room, and then so you're always guaranteed your accommodation. It's a short walk to work to the new media centre and everything that Tony Cochran's trying to talk the federal government into funding.
The new media centre, yeah.
And the new pit complex and everything else.
Well, the interesting thing is, of course, every stick of furniture from pit lane to pit lane, pit lane entry to pit lane exit, is, as I understand it, owned by the 7 Network.
They could make a profit this year.
They could. Kerry Stokes, yes. Well, we're not very happy with Kerry Stokes because he actually owns the Perth Wildcats, but we won't go there. We Victorians are not very happy.
All right. Now, for fans of Motorsport News, plenty of news from the ARC, drag racing in the United States and in Australia. A lot of speedway news, and one story that I'm looking forward to hearing the result of with Wade Auger a little bit later on is Murph and Richo's attempts at sprint car piloting.
It's interesting, isn't it, when you get somebody from road racing into sprint car racing, and they sort of look at it. And as we all know, Max Dumpsey tried V8 supercar racing a few years ago and wasn't totally successful at it. And then the tarmac guys get onto the clay, and it's a little bit different. They get a bit conservative when something like that happens, and I don't blame them, to be perfectly honest, because a 700 horsepower JSR or maximum sprint car would be a real handful.
Oh, yes, a lot of fun.
A lot of fun. Same with rally cars, but they tend to be rather specialised in that area of the sport.
Mm. Whilst we're on the dirt, of course, one race series that's coming down your way fairly soon is, of course, the Winter Trail, which sees three of the best sprint car circuits in Australia. Of course, the Borderline Raceway, Warrnambool, and don't you hate it when you forget the last one?
Avalon,
of course.
That'll be great.
All back out there on the track, and so many good cars staying in the country now with the tours that we've had over here from the US drivers. It's really helped to rebuild what was a little bit of a flagging series of sprint cars in Australia.
Well, yes, it, the talent in Australian sprint car racing is definitely there. When you see the Americans come out, it's not night and day different, even though Donnie Schott had a good season during the summer when he came out to run the WSS. The Easter Trail, of course, just one part of a huge weekend of motorsport in Australia, because we've got two motorcycle events as well, two international motorcycle events. So come this Easter, I'm not quite sure which events I'm going to be heading to.
Mm-hmm, yeah, and how ordinary is it? We have two big events like that on the one weekend, i.e. the same as when we've got Bathurst and the Motorcycle Grand Prix going up against each other. It's a bit ordinary in the programming, and this isn't even CAM's fault.
Well, it's not, but the FIA, who are, of course, if you like, CAM's parent company, are the ones who put the British Grand Prix on at Easter. And apparently, you can apparently get even money at Corals, at Eurobet in the UK, that it will snow during the British Grand Prix.
Oh, well, that's just goes to prove. Now, the other interesting thing this week which really caught my eye was an advertisement you've got in there from Fred Gibson. Is Fred clearing out the workshop, or does he need more money for his team?
My theory is that, of course, the Dumbrells are now in charge of Gibson Motorsport, or Kmart Racing as it is now. Now, if you look into the history of Paul Dumbrell, he's got quite a few race cars in the very short time he's been on the racetrack. So what I'm guessing is that the factory's only so big. They've got two Kmart cars, they've got the Wins car in there, they've got Dumbrell, Formula Ford, Formula Holden, probably some sort of outlight car lurking there in the background. So I guess, yeah, Freddie needs to get rid of some of his Datsuns, and we're away.
I know which one I'd like to buy if I had the money, and it's the one on the very far left-hand side of the advertisement with the naughty W word on it, called Godzilla, as they used to call it.
Ah, yes, Godzilla. Well, yes, I mean, they're all nice. I actually wouldn't mind the Exa. That's a car that sort of sticks in my mind for a little bit. Or what about the George Shuriko that's had on Polar Bathurst?
Yeah, there's quite a few nice little pieces of machinery there. It's something that if they wanted to, could have fun at the local...